We'll come back, order. Do you want to roll, or do we, everybody is present. Who do we have on the line with us?
On the telephone? Nope. Lisa Von Bargen, are you on the line? Sam Allen, are you on the line?
Yes, Sam Allen.
Okay, thank you, Sam. We're expecting one more person. Thank you. Waiting for Lisa.
We can wait for
Lisa. I sent
her
a text, yeah. Hi, we're cranked up into regular session. Just, I sent you a text, but I don't know if it got through. Okay, bye. Oh, okay, we'll wait for you. Okay, thank you. Bye.
Is it going to be just a minute?
She's calling right now.
All right, perfect. We're waiting for Lisa to get online, and then we'll continue.
No, you might just be indisposed for a minute. I don't know. He knew. I think he. Yeah, because Bob made an announcement and he was here.
I'll wait for him to return. I think he's holding it.
Yep.
I'm waiting for Steve as a voting member to return, and Lisa's calling me.
Dialing back in.
Thank you, Lisa. We hear you fine. We're waiting for Steve to come back in the room right at the moment.
Okay.
Once he returns, then we'll get rolling here. Here he is. He's back. All right, we're back to order. To continue on, we met in executive session. We had discussions, and I have a motion. I'll go ahead and read it. The motion is to create a subcommittee to provide a review of the CEO and mutually develop a work plan for growth and development over the next year. Item two is a date will be set to meet with the CEO and the subcommittee soon, either in January or December or January, and I think that after this meeting you guys should get together and try to figure that out. And then three, after the board and or the committee and Trey agree on a growth and development plan, and a contract will be submitted for ratification no later than the next regular board meeting for a three-year contract and an annual 3% COLA. Is there a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Please call the roll.
Amelon?
Yes.
Sieverson?
Yes.
Coos?
Yes.
Lynn?
Yes.
Prysunka?
Yes.
Thank you.
And as an appointment to that committee, it'll be a committee of three. Will be Cliff Skillings, Bob Lynn, and Lisa Van Bargen. That moves us on into new business. unless there's any other comments or concerns or statement. Seeing none, item A is consideration and approval of Swan Lake Housing fourplex contract. There's a motion on page 31.
Chairman?
Yes.
I move to authorize staff to enter into a contract with Iron Construction LLC for SEPA's RR project number 286-18 for the Swan Lake Housing Replacement Contract for the lump sum amount of $749,434 plus a 2.5 contingency of $18,735. For a total not to exceed amount of $768,169.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Cliff, did you have a conflict here that you had stated earlier in the meeting?
No conflict. Just on the table, cards on the table, we provided some concrete numbers to both Byron and BAM for this.
Okay, you haven't? Yeah, okay. Perfect. Thank you. Trey.
Chairman, this is Lisa.
Yes.
So I just want to clarify, the last sentence of the agenda statement says an overall budget of $79,300 is included in the FY 2020 R&R budget, of which $13,325 has already been spent. The actual number in the 2020 budget is $780,475. The $13,325 is FY 19 expenditure.
Thank you for that clarification. Trey.
So I think you guys are somewhat familiar with our efforts over the years to address Swan Lake Housing and the shortages. At our last board meeting, staff was instructed to seek bids on essentially a fourplex. And I'll let Ed elaborate on this, on the bids and where we're at, and give you an update. If it's okay, sorry.
No, that's fine.
So, well, we received two bids. Obviously, we considered the highest of the two bids, and it actually was the low bid as well. Both bids used a couple of the same subs. So, what I've seen in the two bids difference was the most cost, the second highest bid was double the most cost as this one. And in addition, there was another $100,000 in the removal of the existing home in the second bid, which threw it to the upper 900 range. This is 250 over what I estimated, and those costs are in an additional $100,000 over what I had estimated. I thought we could get that modular home for about 180 plus mold, and then additional costs for the porches and foundation changes, putting it at $225 per foot. It's actually come in at $312 for the total cost per foot. The concrete that we're adding to it was not in my estimate, because it's a firewall that the state fire marshal is requiring because it's over a threeplex. I wasn't aware that we had a requirement to have a fire break between the structures, so don't know exactly what that added to it, but it did add some to it. Are there any other questions?
Any other questions? Yes.
Yeah. The last meeting we talked about the design.
Uh-huh.
And did you change the design to where we cut maybe one roof and two
yep.
next to police?
Yep. It's a
okay.
It's a fourplex. It's actually four individual modules in a two-story configuration.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Be 2,400 square feet total.
Any other discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I would just add, I mean, obviously, this is expensive. And I'll say staff, we all had reservations about even bringing it before the board in some ways. You know, we hashed around, are there different ways we could skin this cat? No offense to cats. Is there a different way we can do things to bring down costs? And we've looked at all kinds of different variables. And I think at the end of the day, if we do, say we did a duplex now, did a duplex later, it's going to end up costing more at the end of the day. You just can't get around the MOB and DMOB costs. The price per square footage in remote locations is just outrageous. So it is what it is, but that's what we were asked to bring before the board. So that's what we're recommending.
Yeah, there was a considerable change in MOB cost due to having to have a crane there to stack the second story on. So I started looking, well, what if we went back to two duplexes, single story, replaced two homes? Well, another flaw in my estimate is I was working on the assumption that there was enough value in the existing home that would pay for the removal of the home. Neither one of the bidders agreed with that. Their philosophy is that it's coming out and it's going to be destroyed. So the full cost of removal is being borne by this bid.
Are they going to dispose of that out there? Are they going to burn it or bring it into town?
The proposal states that they're going to take it to pool engineering site, Ward Cove, and it would be disassembled and burned. They'd take the tin off the roof, anything of value, and then burn it.
Mr. Chairman, can we, is there room in the contract there that if they do bring it to town and then elect to sell it, that those funds are to be, because as soon as we give them possession of the building and they come in and do a salvage sale, they're telling us there's no value to it. I don't know if that's a possibility or not.
I think we got to dispose of it one way or the other. What happened, the way it's disposed of, I guess.
It actually says in the RFP that it's the contractor takes possession of it with award. Removal. I mean, I don't know how we'd go back on that. And I, after talking to both of the contractors, they're going on the assumption that there may be rotten walls, and when they try to lift it and move it, it could just fall into pieces. So they didn't want to put any value to it and then end up having that loss. So they're taking that risk.
But how much are we renting our equipment for when it falls apart?
Yeah, it's got to survive even twice. It's been craned off on the bar and moved again.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, that's a lot of twists on there and stuff like that. They get value out of it. Otherwise, they're just like, pool doesn't have enough stuff there already.
Yeah.
So there's more stuff.
And it's near and 4 years old, so there is that. There's been no major improvements to it in 4 years, so, you know.
All right, and we already have identified the need in regards to housing and then a potential office and storage for sensitive equipment and all that other kind of stuff. So you see the numbers as they exist, and like they alluded to, working in remote sites, everything goes up in accordingly. So any other comments on this particular motion? Hearing and seeing none, please call the roll.
Prysunka?
Yes.
Amelon?
Yes.
Siebertson?
Yes.
Coos?
Yes.
Lynn?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Brings us to item B, consideration and approval of the 2020 annual transmission line maintenance contract.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I move to authorize staff to enter into an amendment to SEPA's contract number 17022 for 2017-19 annual transmission line maintenance with Electric Power Constructors, Inc. For SEPA's 2020 line transmission line maintenance for the lump sum value of $800,096.27 plus a 10% contingency of $80,009.63 for supplemental or emergency work for a total of $880,105.90.
Thank you very much. Second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Trey?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. As stated in the summary there, the agency awarded its 2017 to 2019 annual transmission line contract to Electric Power Constructors, and we also included an option to extend that 1 year. That's essentially what this does. We reviewed their proposal. I think there's some small increases on, and the scope's a little bit different from last year, so it's not exactly an apples to apples, but the supplemental portion of it, we went back and discussed some of those items with them, and they've maintained those rates same as last year. So our recommendation is to award this at to have to go out and do a full blown RFP and go through that process would be pretty expensive and time consuming, and we're happy with the work that's been getting done, and we think the price is reasonable, and we don't anticipate that there would be any large savings, or perhaps the price would go up if we actually took it out and bid it. So
Trey, where are we inspecting with the bucket truck? What portion of the line? Is that Tongass Avenue, or is that in the other community?
That'd be the visual.
Turn your mic there, please.
Oh, sorry. That would be the section that parallels the Tongass Highway. Everything that's accessible by road. That would save them having to climb it.
Yep.
And that makes that a little bit simpler. So
I just didn't know if it was here or another community or where.
That would be strictly the Ketchikan section. Here.
All right. Good. Any other questions, comments? Hearing, seeing none, please call the roll.
Lynn?
Yes.
Prysunka?
Yes.
Amelon?
Yes.
Siebertson?
Yes.
Coos?
Yes.
Thank you.
Item C, presentation, consideration, and approval of the FY 2020 SEPA budget. There's a motion someplace. What's in with the budget? Right?
Page 3, I believe.
Mr. Chair, are we on page 34 then?
33, 34 is
the wholesale power rate.
That's the wholesale power rate. We're doing the 2020.
It's on page 3
of
the budget.
Okay, now the budget itself.
Not a PDF page number.
Yeah. So the motion is I move to approve the Southeast Alaska Power Agency FY 2020 operating revenue and expense budget in the amount of $4,988,869 and a non-operational income cost in the amount of $4,379,943. Do I have a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. And so just prior to getting into the budget, it's, you know, we got this pretty late in the month in order to really do a full analysis, and I'm hoping that in the future, and I know this was, we had a 6 month and then we changed our year, and so there were some things that probably slowed down getting it out, but I've heard from other board members that it just short time with everything else that's going on in their communities, it was difficult to get through this. So I think that a detailed discussion is warranted so that we have a good understanding that's in here. So with that, Trey, that's to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And our apologies for the getting it out with short notice. As the Chair noted, we had a lot of stuff going on right at that same time. And as I've done in previous years, I'll go through every single FERC code. We'll take as much time as the board needs to ask questions and do our best to answer them.
Okay.
The one thing I will note that I've included in my CEO budget cover letter, there's, first of all, the budget that we're going to present today is going to be a comparison year over year to the FY 19 budget. We had this 6 month interim budget kind of squeezed in between, and trying to give you somewhat of an apples to apples comparison was difficult if we're going to try to integrate that. And then I'll also note that some of the numbers are somewhat skewed in FY 19 because we did push forward the maintenance activities that would typically be done in the spring to the fall of that year due to the drought conditions and the need for our member utilities to they're running up against some hours and stuff on their diesel. So I'm going to stay on my executive summary here just for a second and talk about revenues briefly. So we put together this budget based on the premise of 7.3 cent kilowatt hour wholesale power rate. It's maintained, it's been flat over 22 years, and essentially meaning the rate has actually gone down because there's been no adjustments for inflation. We've previously discussed potential small incremental rate increases at the board level off and on over the years. And I'll say probably the main catalyst for presenting this to the board at this time is we haven't been able to make our levelized payment into the R&R fund of $2.552 million on an annual basis. We did not make that payment in June. We did not make any interim payments to that in the last 6 months. And we don't have enough in our revenue account to make those payment, that full payment here, which would we typically do like right at the beginning of our new fiscal year. So with that, I think it's, as I explained earlier, you know, if we have a couple of low sales years and, you know, our revenue account and our funds can get depleted rather quickly. And I think it would, it's a good time to discuss this. I also recognize that the member utilities potentially need some time to integrate this into their business plan and their budgets. So one alternative when we get to that particular rate discussion that will come up a little bit later might be to look at beginning a small incremental rate increase 6 months from now, perhaps at the beginning of July, to give the member utilities opportunity to adjust to that. And at the end of the day, a half cent increase in the wholesale power rate in rough terms is about an additional $837,000 into the budget. And you know, if you're short on your revenues by $3.5 million, it takes several years to make that up with just that small increase. So just to keep things in perspective. Then we also have some issues that we know that are likely going to require some funds, and that's obviously the submarine cable issue. Portion of that hopefully is going to be covered by insurance, but it's likely that we'll be spending some money out of our own pocket to resolve that. And then it's still unknown if you know, if we're just going to replace one or if we're going to end up putting in another option. Of course, we'll get into the details of submarine cables a little bit later. So in my budget cover letter, I typically try to go through the FERC codes and break them down individually just so the board can conveniently look through my cover letter and just get a pretty good idea of where the anomalies are from year over year, whether the budget's higher or lower. And so I'm assuming hopefully most of you guys have had a chance to just read that. It gives you a quick snapshot of essentially the budget. So with that, I'm going to work my way through the budget. Stop me at any time. And I'm happy to try to answer any questions you may have. And so I'll start on page 3, which is essentially a summary, and it includes the motion below it of the larger items, including you know, our forecasted revenue, operating expense, and then on the non-operating income and non-operating expense and liability side too. Hopefully this summary gives you a nice quick snapshot of those key financial components. So moving into page four, this is our estimate on sales budget. And so the way this is laid out a little bit different from last year, and this includes the 0.073. If you look at the box, the top box on the right hand side on the 2020 power sales income budget, and right below that we've included what that would look like at 0.068 cents per kWh, just to kind of give you an indication what each member utility's share of that would be. In rough order of magnitude, it's, you know, 50% Ketchikan and 25% for the northern communities. Any questions so far? Okay.
And these numbers, Trey, represent a normal year and the community's purchase of power.
So, sure, I can elaborate on that, Mr. Chair. So our estimate for this year was built by developing using a five-year average of loads for Ketchikan, Petersburg, and Wrangell, and with a 2% bias lower to account for expected a little lower fish processing loads in the north and potentially some lower shipyard loads to the south. As you know, that can vary widely depending on what the weather ends up being, if it's colder, if we have higher inflows, if it's warmer. One thing to remember, sometimes even if we have product to sell, for instance, Ketchikan's lakes may be very full and they might draw on their own resources harder and draw less on SEPA's. So there are times that you would think that we would be, our sales would be robust, but sometimes it's actually the opposite, depending on the conditions. Because obviously they don't want to spill at their project, so they're going to go ahead and use that power first. Any other, is that good enough?
That's good enough, yes, okay. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Sure. If we move on to page five, we just give our, this is a good quick snapshot of, it shows you the, I'll say this band of volatility in year over year comparisons with megawatt hour sales. And obviously you can translate that to dollars by $68 a megawatt hour.
And so the red line with the arrows represents average, or what was that?
That's
the 2020 budget.
Oh, and how it compares to everything else.
How it compares to everything else, and obviously you can see 2019 our revenues were significantly depressed. And on average, you know, if you look at what we're forecasting, you know, it's almost exactly to 2011, 2014, and 2016. So we're not drastically high or drastically low if you take those factors into account.
Thank you.
Moving on to page six. This is just a nice quick summary to see where we're at and what we're proposing. The budget will look a little bit different still. We're still kind of refining it as we've taken on the various projects over the years with Tai and Swan. And then the transmission, how all that fits and how it's displayed to the board in these reports. I think this is a fairly clean way to depict that. And just quickly looking at this, you can see that Swan and Tai are relatively close for the expense budget, and transmission lines are obviously a large component. Then you have G&A, and then your total. And for the FY19 budget, we're actually about $800,000 lower than that. And then for just rough numbers, that's mostly due to the submarine cable inspections that we did during that year for both the submarine cables and the ROV inspection of the power tunnel for Titan.
So Trey, I noticed in electric plant wages and benefits, there's about $100,000 difference between Swan Lake and Tyee. What's that contributed to?
So let's go through each FERC code, and I'll point that out specifically.
Perfect. Sounds good. Thank you.
But if I look at my quick, yeah, there's not much there to go through. So we'll get to that, and we'll show you that.
Perfect,
Mr. Chairman. So we'll just launch right into this.
Okay.
Page 7 is FERC code 535. And you can see it's the amount that's fully budgeted is in the first column. And then the year-over-year budget is down at the other end of the margin there. So year-over-year, this goes down significantly. Variances is one-time expenses like in MAPCON. Some increases this year. And, you know, there's a large effort that's still ongoing in this area that I think is very, very key to how we operate and maintain the plants. And we've been working really hard at this for the last couple of years to standardize our operating procedures and just get the documentation at the plant to the level that it needs to be. There were a lot of gaps over the years when we took over these, and we've identified those, and we're working to fill those. So, you'll see O&M manual updated. Tyee has included this in this. We still have some final MAPCON wrap up there at Swan Lake as well. And we'll continue to spend some money in this particular area until we're satisfied with where we're at there. We've got a person working on this effort. He's the right guy to do it. He's an expert, and this is what he does. He lives and breathes this stuff, and he can really only handle so much workload, and I'm hoping that we can keep him on for a couple of years till we got this project finished. And Ed, you may want to add a little comment on this as well.
Sure. If you remember back 2017, you know, we did the what was called the Pro-Am review of Tyee and Swan Lake to see where we were in reliability issues. The team leader for that process is who we've hired to go through and rewrite all of these. And he recently retired from the Bureau of Reclamation, and he was the head guy at Bureau of Reclamation.
To give him an idea of how many projects this guy's works on.
When he was ahead of the Pro-Am review portion of it, they were reviewing 74 plants annually. And you know, he's amazing to work with. The guy is really, really sharp. And so what we're doing with this O&M review is more than just a review. It's not a really good description of a project, but what we're going into is reviewing every piece of equipment, and then in this O&M manual, there's a step-by-step. So if you want to go work on the governor unloader valve, it tells you where it's at. It tells you what print to go to find the information, both electrically and mechanically, and the tasks that need to be performed according to the O&M manuals. So it's going to be a Bible when we get done. New guy off the street can walk in, here's my PM that I need to do today. I look at a piece of equipment up in here and go do the tasks, and it tells us step by step how to do it and the right information to do it right. So it's a huge undertaking.
Ed, will that have an inventory associated with it so you know what parts they need to have on hand to do those?
So that falls into the MAPCON portion of it coming up. That's also, MAPCON's got the ability to track our inventories, and that's going to be part of the MAPCON review, is to go back in and the preventative maintenance tasks, bring those back up to modern standards of review, and take out all of the equipment that has been decommissioned and others that have been commissioned in the last 40 years.
Well, that all be digitized, Ed, so it'll be easy to change when you change the equipment.
Yep, the whole thing's in a Word document. Yep, absolutely. That's another thing. Right now it's a hard copy. So.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ed. Moving on to FERC Code 537 on page 8. This is essentially the snow surveys and any minor equipment needed to adjust snow gauges and the like. We have deployed the snow pillows at both locations for Swan and Tyee, so that'll be helpful as well, but we still need to do the helicopter snow surveys as part of that effort. So don't foresee any changes in our, that's essentially to fund two trips each year. Any questions? For code 538. So year over year, it's pretty flat. We are planning on doing a DC ramp test and generator inspection at Tyee this year. That's scheduled. We do have a little bit of money in these for critical unforeseen events, which we always have some minor ones throughout the year. Nothing really else to add to that. I'm going to keep rolling unless I hear somebody interrupt me. FERC code 539, operations, miscellaneous maintenance, barges, flights, fuels, oils, rolling stock maintenance, safety, telecom, training. This particular area, and you'll see that, and this is probably a good place to point it out, is on page 10 and page 11. You'll see the second column on both those pages indicates a location now. So we, through the changing our chart of accounts and all that kind of good stuff, we're adding improving our ability to drill down a little bit better and track real costs. So in this particular area and on the next page, one of them's Tyee and one's Swan Lake. I'll say that there is a little bit of increase in barge and fuel costs and things like that, but most importantly in this is we put in some specialized training for the guys that we've identified some gaps that we would like to bolster. And so there is quite a bit of money in here for training, but we feel that these things are key to reliability and safety, and we would like to expedite getting those trainings done for the both plants, and that's why you see the increase.
So Trey, would you remind me who we have our flight contract with now?
So they have not changed.
Okay.
We're still PAC Air and Sunrise up north.
Thank you.
Any questions? FERC 539. Same thing. Next page, sorry. And then page 12, we move to 540. And this is our typical land use fees, things of that nature. And that's just been increased essentially to cover inflation. No big changes there. FERC 541 on page 13. Hydropower station maintenance. And this has gone down a little bit. Some things have worked out of this. And then we've added in some additional tooling that we identified during this year's maintenance that we need to purchase a few tools out of the plant. Plants, I should say. FERC code 543, dams, reservoirs, and waterways. You'll see a significant decrease from 386 or almost 387,000 down to less than 18,000 in this area. And that's one of the items I've mentioned earlier that had to do with ROV inspections, one-time expenses.
So, Craig, can we go back to page 12 just for a minute?
Sure.
And one of the things that catches my eye in there, of course, is our U.S. Forest Service land use and right-of-way stuff. Is there any way that we can get those vacated, get relief from some of that? Because just with the two land use for Tyee and the right-of-way stuff, you know, we're spending quite a bit of money every year to lease that. And I don't know if there's any opportunities for something like that.
I'm not aware of any. I can try to ask some land use experts to see if there's any way to